Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, chair of the club's grown-ups forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers. Our first speaker is Robin Myers with Care for Seniors. Robin has had 10 years working with seniors. In her work, she has seen cases of fraud and financial abuse. And Robin has been a victim of identity fraud twice. Also, Nancy Meyer, realtor and senior real estate specialist, is a person who's adept at helping seniors with their retirement transitions and plans for future needs. Her expertise can come into play as a full service or as part of an existing multidisciplinary team. However the situation, her goal is to help older individuals decide whether a move to a different environment is in their best interest. And I know, Nancy, that you've seen cases of fraud and abuse yourself.
Too many.
So, before I take up too much time by way of introduction and steal from the program, I'm going to turn the mic and the podium over to Robin Myers. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you all for coming tonight. My interest in the subject of fraud began when I was working with elders and was very aware of the elders that were living around me in my neighborhood. I live in an old Slovenian neighborhood in San Francisco on Potrero Hill. And our block has several elderly people who I've come to know over the years that I've lived there. Two of these neighbors were ripped off in different scams. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that tonight. My own personal experience with fraud began when I was trying to get a loan on my house and found out that someone had opened a Walmart credit card in my name. And I got a call from India. And they said on the other line, you owe us money. You owe us 200 and some dollars. And I said, well, how do you know it's me? And they gave me my Social Security number over the phone. Well, obviously, I freaked out. Most of us would if somebody read your Social Security number back to you over the phone. So I thought that I had put that to bed after many, many letters to the credit bureaus and having my own credit report frozen so that no one else could get into my account. But then it reared its ugly head again when I went to refinance my home 4 years later. So I've had my experience with what they call true identity theft. That's where a person has their name, their phone numbers, their Social Security numbers, and everything taken from them. So that's my experience with fraud firsthand. Fraud is a billion-dollar industry. And it's kind of like thinking of, okay, how big is the software industry? How big is the timber industry? How big is the chemical industry? This is actually an industry which makes more than some of those industries. $4 billion a year is lost. Funeral scams, those can generate an average of $20,000 per incident. So what a company can do is come into town, open up a funeral parlor undertaking business, get people in the church community convinced that they need to pre-plan, take the money, and a couple years later, bye-bye. They disappear, and they're never heard from again. Charity scams, an average of $836 per victim. And Ponzi schemes, well, we all know the Bernie Madoff story. So it's sad that some of the older adults in our own community have been affected by one or more of these. Fraud is actually taking the lives of seniors in the way that it affects our health and our outlook. 25% of the adults in this room, so look around, 25% of you guys tonight are going to be affected by fraud. That's an incredible number. I mean, we can't even talk about all of us being affected by cancer. The numbers aren't that high. So this is serious business. And 35% of the cases of fraud that are reported are by the frail elderly over the age of 70. So that's some sobering statistics. The consequences are that fraud causes trauma in an older adult. It changes the way that they think and that they behave. One of the symptoms can be increased illnesses, somatic disorders like not being able to sleep at night. I know that I wasn't able to sleep at night when I was a victim of identity theft. I didn't know who was out there that had my name and number. Depression is another thing, and also anxiety. Many older adults are afraid of what's going to happen next, and to have this additional loss of money due to fraud is very, very hard. So the consequences, victims of fraud feel personally violated. It's almost as if your house has been broken into, that robbers have come in and dumped all of your drawers and taken your mementos, and you lose trust in yourself at that point. You're wondering, what did I do wrong? What did I do to deserve this? And so that's kind of a consequence that happens when we are victims of this. And besides the financial pressures of fraud, there may be instances where people actually have become destitute and no longer have money for food or medication. On the AARP website, there's actually some recordings of incidences of older adults being swindled out of their last few hundred dollars. So it's actually a travesty. So why are seniors so vulnerable? Well, most of that generation has worked very, very hard over their whole lives, and they've built this little nest egg. And that's what the con men want. That's what the scam artists want, is access to that nest egg. Most of the seniors own their own homes and have a lot of equity, especially in the San Francisco area. Those homes have earned quite a bit. You know, when they bought their house for $40,000 or less, sometimes now those houses are worth $600,000 or $700,000. That represents a substantial gain, and that is money that should be for taking care of older adults in their aging process. But sometimes it's taken from them by con artists. Older adults are lonely. I find a lot of people that are living in their homes alone in San Francisco, and because of chronic illnesses, are maybe not as mobile as they used to be. They may have rheumatoid arthritis and not be able to walk those steps and go down to the senior center anymore. So it's almost as if nobody's really looking in on them. And if they don't have a son or daughter nearby or a neighbor that's checking in on them, something could happen to them. I find that this generation, too, is the most wonderful generation. They're the ones that saw us through the Great Depression and World War II. They have that can-do attitude, and they tend to be charitable individuals, ones that are always willing to help, wanting to help, and wanting to get involved with a worthy cause. And so they are susceptible to those phone calls from charities saying, "We're the police recreation fund, and we need money for bats and balls and soccer balls and footballs and basketballs, and won't you please donate?" Also, one of the other reasons that seniors are so vulnerable is because, especially now, they think that they're going to outlive their money. And it's true. It used to be that people would die in their 80s. Now we're living into our hundreds. And when I actually looked at my actuarial tables, I could live to 110. Not that I'd want to, but it's scary. I will definitely outlive my money, for sure. So enter the con artist into this little game of trying to access that nest egg. The con artist has a few ways of getting in. One of them is to masquerade as an IRS agent. And all of the instances that I tell you tonight are true. They have been pulled. They have been scammed. So you get a call from an IRS agent, and he says, "Hi, this is Jonathan Williams, and I'm in the Provo office of the IRS." Well, that's where we all send our tax returns, so we know that that's probably legitimate. And he says, "Yeah, we've got your tax return here, and we have some serious issues with this. What's your Social Security number?" Don't give it to them. Please don't. Because what they're doing is they're trying to get that number, and they'll keep asking more and more questions. Who do you bank with? Why didn't we get your payment check? Why didn't we get your 1099 from your bank on your interest statement? And they'll fish and fish until they can get more and more information from you. If that should happen and you get this call from somebody saying that they're from the IRS, you probably should hang up the phone and then find the real number for the IRS and call them. Don't trust him to give you the number, because it's probably going to be some 800 number that goes to a desk in a boiler room where many people are making those kind of fraudulent calls. In my business, I've seen some really bad late-life romances. And this is where older adults become very, very vulnerable to either a neighbor who kind of moves in to help them, or a young handyman type that all of a sudden starts off with, you know, helping them fix the shade or the refrigerator door, and then says, "Oh, can I pick up some groceries for you?" Well, the last person that did this and picked up groceries for one of my clients ask for a $1,000 check to go get a carton of milk and some eggs. This is true. This is in the last 2 months. Some con men try to use community groups, especially church groups, to get into that circle of friends and to be introduced. And especially with church groups, we all want to believe that it's a credible person. And that, oh, they're joining a church group, so they must be good. Well, not necessarily, because there are many scams where they come in, they ask for investments, and they say, "Oh, yeah, you know, your friend so-and-so invested with me and made a lot of money. We're averaging 10% when the bank is giving you, you know, 1.6 on your CDs. So, of course, that's going to seem attractive, but it might not be for real. And so it's always really, really important to evaluate where you're going to put your money and get some second opinions on it. Tonight I want to talk a little bit about top scams. And we all know about the sweepstakes scams. Don't ever fill out a sweepstakes or magazine publishing thing, because what this does is it puts you on a sucker list. Once you have mailed in your name, address, and so forth, that sucker list is sold to other sweepstakes companies, and so that address, phone number, address, name goes into a mooch list. And for that reason, once you're on the mooch list, you are always on the mooch list. None of the sweepstakes are for free. If it looks too good to be true, believe me, it is. Jury scams. Those just replaced Nigerian letters as one of the biggest scams. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Nigerian letters that you get either in the mail or on the internet asking for money. They originate in Nigeria. And they're very, very smooth. They try to gain your trust in the first couple of sentences of the Nigerian letter. Usually starts out like, I am Eleonora Dubwin, and I work for the Bank of Nigeria, and I came into some money, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, you only have to send them $1,000 so that they can get the money out of the country. Well, you'd never see that $1,000 again. Many people have not. But the jury duty scam is where you get a letter in the mail or a letter on the internet saying that you missed jury duty and you're guilty of a felony. And what they want to do is, again, get your Social Security number, get your address, your phone numbers, and things like that. So if you really think that you missed jury duty, you can always call the courthouse and find out. Internet phishing is something that we're all subject to if we use any kind of online banking. And that is when the email looks like it came from your bank, and they say, we need to update your information. And it looks like it's Citibank. And when you hit on it, it actually brings you to a page which again looks like Citibank, but it's asking for password codes and Social Security numbers. So whenever you get something like that, you should always call your bank and find out if they need updates on your information, because they're not going to ask you on an email, believe me. The way that they do that is there's sophisticated software that can take a site and make it look like Citibank and make it look like it's going to Citibank, but then it gets a redirect at the last minute to a different site. So you have to be very, very careful of emails that you reply to. Identity theft. I never found out who got my Social Security number. How did they get it? I don't know. It could have been when I filled out my Kaiser Health application and had to put a Social Security number on there. It could have happened if I opened a bank account. Who knows? But somebody behind the scenes got that Social Security number. Could have been a computer that got hacked. I don't know. So you never really know who got your identity and how. But it takes Americans an average of 60 hours of your time to get through it and to correct it. That's an average, 60 hours. So I've spent more than 120 hours just getting through all the paperwork. You go down and make the police report. Then you have to call, you have to write letters to all the credit card agencies. And then they send you the information that they have. And you have to take off all of the addresses that aren't yours and all of the accounts that weren't yours. It is absolutely dreadful. Charity scams like the one I told you about. There's been a couple in San Francisco that were specifically related to police or firemen's recreational programs. So if you really want to contribute to something like that, take the darn check down to the fire station. They'll make sure it gets to the right place. Sorry about that. Okay. Home care fraud. This is a new one that's kind of come up on the horizon, and it usually deals with someone trying to hire a home care companion off of, like, Craigslist. And you're thinking, oh, I'm going to save a lot of money by hiring off of Craigslist because I get somebody to work for, you know, between $11 and $15 an hour. Well, what's happened to people is that they either get somebody who comes into the home and steals something, or in the case of the Concord woman, had somebody come into the home and kill her. So you have to be aware of that. Visa and MasterCard fraud. Has anyone in here been called on the phone before from your Visa card saying, this is the fraud department? Yeah. So you have to be really careful on those calls. Never, ever give them the number on the back of your card. What they do is they masquerade as somebody working in the fraud department of the Visa. They say, well, we have your card number here, and probably they do have the card, number, but they don't have the code. So they'll say, okay, your card number is this, and we've noticed some fraudulent activity, and we just want to let you know about it. You won't be responsible for it, but do you have the card in your possession? Okay, now turn the card over and give me the last three numbers that are on the line. You'd never want to do that because that's their way of fishing for the number, and they're going to Hawaii on your visa. So, imposter fraud, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my neighbor who was a victim of that. Jury summons fraud we talked about, and also there's a new one that the California Department of Corporations and many of the AARP agencies are looking at, and that is the free lunch financial information scams that are out there. Most of them are not free lunch, so you have to be careful of those. San Francisco swindles. These are the ones that actually happened to my neighbors. So Eddie was a nice guy, retired postal worker, lived next door at home with his 90-year-old elderly mother. And one day he called me in a state of panic. And he said, Robin, they've taken everything. And I said, wait a minute, Eddie, they've taken what? Who? And he says, they took everything. A man came to the door dressed as a water department worker, and he had another guy with him. One guy took Eddie downstairs to the garage, to the main water shutoff, while the other one ransacked the bedrooms upstairs. And it turned out that Eddie had lost his father's ruby ring and all of his collectible gold coins. Well, I jumped in my car, and I raced around the neighborhood like a maniac trying to find these two guys masquerading as water department workers, but we couldn't find them. And in the end, the only thing that we did was we walked door to door for a three-block radius and dropped flyers at everybody's front door saying, warning. So here was Eddie asking for something. And, you know, today anybody can manufacture a little ID badge like this on their computer. So you shouldn't even trust the ID badges. If somebody's really working in your neighborhood, the water department, call the water department. Find out if they're truly working in your neighborhood. And you are not safe if you are at an assisted living community. I know two women in San Francisco. One fell for the scam and the other one didn't. It is now a $9 million scam that they just arrested people, seven people in Canada. And sometimes it's called the grandma scam. What it is that supposedly a grandkid, somebody masquerading as a grandkid, calls you on the phone and says, Grandma, I'm stuck in Arizona. My car blew up, and I've been impounded, and I'm in the police station. I'm in jail, and I need $450 right away. And Helga, who is at a very nice assisted living facility in San Francisco, fell for it. She said, well, he called me Nana. It sounded like him. She went down to Western Union, wired him the money, and then when she got back to the assisted living, she says, oh, what did I just do? Well, then she called her grandson at home, and he was at home. So another woman, 2 weeks later at an assisted living community in San Francisco, got the same call. She hung up and called the police. So she was not a victim. And then lastly, there's Anita's parents. Anita needed help for her father who had dementia. Her mom could no longer handle it. Her mother had some chronic health issues. And so her idea was to get a caretaker for them. So rather than go through an agency, which is expensive in San Francisco, she decided to go on Craigslist. So she thought everything was going to be fine. And she works full-time, so she was not able to be there every minute that the caregiver was there. The caregiver comes and seems like a nice person, takes care of her parents for 2 days, leaves on the third day with half of the contents of her parents' house. So you never know. So consumer beware. If it looks too good to be true, it is. If you have to send a check, a money order, to cover taxes or shipping or service fees, forget it. It's not legitimate. If you won something, you won something. If you have to make a decision right now, if the offer's not going to be good tomorrow, don't do it. Don't do it. And if somebody says, you don't need to check us out, your friends made money on us, check them out. And if you've just won a free gift, there is no free gift. So protect yourself. If you believe that you might be a victim of identity theft, you can always place a freeze on your credit report. It's a nuisance to do that, but it works. That means that no one can access your credit without your permission. Hang up the phone. Most of us are on the do not call list already, so that doesn't usually happen unless it's some political party that's calling you. Double check references on any kind of financial investment. Even though Bernie Madoff looked like a good deal, he wasn't. And so we all need to learn from that lesson. Hire help from reputable agencies, whether that is somebody that you're hiring as a handyman, a maid, or as a caregiver. Never give out any of your personal numbers on the phone. And the last thing is walk with a mission, because then you will not be vulnerable on the street. Thank you.
You're listening to Protect Yourself, Family, and Friends from Senior Fraud with Nancy Meyer and Robin Meyer at the Commonwealth Club of California.
Hi, I'm Nancy Meyer. As John told you, I'm a realtor. I'm a seniors real estate specialist, which means that I have a credential, from the National Association of Realtors that enables me to help seniors with all transactions around their homes. I am a senior myself, and I've been living in San Francisco, unbelievably to me, for 41 years. I'd like to talk to you about a number of kinds of fraud that have to do with your home. For most people, their home is their single largest asset. It is also, very possibly when you're a senior, a place where you are absolutely vulnerable, where a lot of your money is stashed because you have equity, and because there are a lot of scammers who think, great, let's go after the senior, they have equity, they're vulnerable, they may be unprotected, and big mistake, they have become stupid. Now, where anybody got that idea that when we got older we became stupid, I don't know. They seem to think so. So there are four kinds of fraud around your home that I'm going to talk about. The first is mortgage fraud. The second is title fraud. The next is home repair fraud, and the final one is the new one, and that's foreclosure fraud. Mortgage fraud usually has to do with seniors wanting to get a reverse mortgage. And what is a reverse mortgage? It's a special kind of home loan that lets you convert the equity of your home into cash, either as a lump sum or as monthly payments. The equity that's built up over those years is paid to you, but unlike regular mortgages, you get payments instead of making them. This is with no repayment required until such time as this is no longer your primary residence. Reverse mortgages are typically used by seniors who need to cash out of some of their equity to supplement Social Security if that's all that they have to live on, in order to pay living expenses, sometimes to pay for medical expenses, or the best one, to enhance your lifestyle. They can be a wonderful tool, but it really is a case-by-case basis. Listen to this from the National Consumer Law Center. In the reverse mortgage market, seniors face some of the same aggressive lending practices that were common in the subprime lending boom. Well-funded marketing campaigns and perverse incentives to brokers are targeting seniors' home equity and using reverse mortgages as their tools. According to AARP, of those taking out home equity loans, more than a quarter selected their lenders based on lender solicitations, and more than half did not consult other lenders to compare rates and provisions. Let me read you an example of a solicitation. This one showed up in the mail, bright yellow card, you couldn't miss it. New government program for seniors over 62 offers really welcome promises. In these tough economic times, the chance to pay off existing mortgages and credit card debt, make home repairs and renovations, even, again, the ability to enhance your lifestyle. Just sign the postage-paid card, list your phone number and your spouse's, and you'll receive free information about how much money you qualify for. Here's the best part. The card reads, "It is your legal right as a United States taxpayer to receive all the information available to you." Uh-huh. The real purpose, of course, is, as Robin was talking about, to collect all of your contact information so that they can sell it to other people with lists. Never respond to this. I'm going to repeat this a lot as we go through this. Never respond to solicitations. Other scam artists sell loan that appeared to be from the Housing and Urban Development Department, and they say that they are insured. But according to AARP, they're billing themselves as investment advisors. They persuade consumers to invest the proceeds of the reverse mortgage in other financial products. Wow, they come saddled with extra costs. In some cases, according to the FBI, of course, you take the lump sum out of your mortgage and you write a check to them to invest, and they are gone. This isn't small change, folks, right? This is $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, more. It's a lot of money, and it's very probably your nest egg. Know who you're talking to. Find lenders through referrals. Don't just take a solicitation. If you have not refinanced in a long time, if you don't know a mortgage broker, first, you could go to the bank that gave you your loan in the first place. If they aren't doing reverse mortgage brokers, talk to someone you know. If you know someone of a younger generation who recently bought a home, they probably dealt with a mortgage broker, but make sure it's your niece or nephew or kid who you trust. Ask somebody from your community, again, your church, your synagogue, your book group. But make sure it's somebody who you trust, you've known them for a while, and you think they're probably pretty reliable. Finally, when you get a loan, consult with other lenders. Don't just take one version. Find out that the interest rate we're talking about is a real interest rate, that because most banks and mortgage brokers, reputable ones, are all working with the same numbers. We know what they are. Also, make sure that the terms that you're looking at are terms that are apples and apples, that you're not being asked to do something else. To protect yourself, be aware of financial advisors who consult you to get all of the cash up front. Pretty much, unless you're facing a major expense with reverse mortgages, monthly payments are not a bad idea. If you need a specific amount, it's possible that you could get a specific amount and the rest in monthly installments. That's something else to consider. Different lenders do different things. Go with a loan agent you know and trust. review the mortgage plan with somebody you know and trust. I'm in the business. I read these loan terms. I don't understand all of it, and I do it all the time. I don't think you're meant to understand all of it, okay? I really don't. But be that as it may, review it with somebody. And I'm going to say something now which I'll repeat, but I think it's very, very important. Always ask the question you think is too stupid to ask. It's probably not, number one. Number two, who cares if it is? We're all entitled to stupid questions, but most of all, it's your money. Ask all the questions you possibly could think of, because frankly, you're doing them a favor. Always ask that question. I promise you, if you don't, it is the one that's going to come around and bite you. Never pay upfront fees on a mortgage. This is important. When you sign for a loan, the day that you go sign your documents, actually the day before, you should receive a closing statement. It's a HUD statement, so it's a government statement, and it has to call out all the expenses that you have to pay going with that loan. If you don't understand them, ask. But you will probably be required to pay some fees, and you will be required to pay them at the close of escrow, at the close of this loan, not upfront. Anybody who asks you to pay upfront fees on a mortgage, tell them thank you very much, goodbye. They are not your friend. Beware of anybody who asks this of you. The next fraud that I want to talk to you about is title fraud. Title fraud is when anyone other than you asks to be put on the title of your home. Now, this can happen in a number of ways, but never allow it to happen unless it's somebody who you know and you trust. Unfortunately, there are unscrupulous real estate, not me, agents and mortgage brokers who will ask this of you. According to a recent report from the FBI and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, there are a host of unscrupulous loan officers, mortgage companies, and loan counselors who are defrauding desperate Americans. Excuse me. In one scheme, people facing foreclosure are told that a reverse mortgage can save their home, and then they're rejected for the mortgage and steered into a deal that transferred title of their property to investors. The end result is that they lose their home anyway. The title document of your home is the thing that says you own it. Whenever it was that you bought your home, you received a thick folder of documentation all about it. One of those documents is your title. If you don't know where it is in your home, find it. If you have 30, 40 years of possessions in your home, find it. It's an important document. You should know where it is. It is the thing that says, I own this property. Often, you might choose to put a family member on your loan. It's not a bad idea. Sometimes it's a very good idea. However, we do know situations where family members have tried to defraud seniors. It's really heartbreaking. This happens sometimes when you go for a reverse mortgage and a family member will say, please, would you put me, take a lump sum, I'll take the money, I will invest it for you. Don't do this. Don't do this. We all want to think that our sons and daughters and nieces and nephews and anybody else is totally trustworthy. For the most part, they are. But it's not a good idea. If you want to have them on title for a short period of time, for a specific transaction, have your attorney draw up a power of attorney document that specifies that they can sign with or for you at this period of time for this transaction. Otherwise, please don't do it. It's not a good idea. Another way to protect your home and protect the title of your home is to put it in a trust. Short form, a trust is something like, picture it as an envelope in which you have put all of your assets, including your home. It's a very good way to protect your property while you're alive. It's called a revocable trust. You can have your signature on it. You can have maybe one of your children's signature on it. Sometimes that's not a bad idea. If it's your daughter who's gone to Stanford and got an MBA and she knows what she's talking about and you find that she's trustworthy, that can be a good idea. When that is the case, any check that is made out regarding your property or anything else will be made out to the trust and goes into the trust. Any check that is written to anybody regarding your property or anything else has to be signed by you and by any other trustees that are on the property. The next kind of fraud that I'd like to talk to you about is home repair fraud. This one is more and more and more prevalent. Robin talked about it briefly. It's a big problem. How does this happen? Older homeowners, as we've said, have a lot of equity in their home. It makes them popular targets. Frequently, we live in older homes. Older homes may need more repairs if you haven't been able to keep up with them. Now, frequently seniors are less likely than others to be able to do the repairs on their home. Why? What if you're a single person living in your home and you need to have somebody come in and do a repair and you feel vulnerable? I sometimes do. I had a plumber over the other day. I hadn't used this plumber before. He was on my company's resource list. I was fine, and he was fine. But I'm aware of it. And when you're a senior, you are probably more aware of it. Last year, I sold a home. It had belonged since the 60s to a couple who had passed on, and their son was selling the home, actually as a trustee. We went into that house, and it was heartbreaking. There was no hot water to the tub or the shower. They had run a hose from the bathroom sink into the tub because all the pipes were so old they had corroded shut. There were a number of similar repairs throughout that house. It made those seniors very vulnerable. Some of the repairs that were needed could have been dangerous. Some of the electrical wire was really scary. Seniors often don't do repairs. They may be aware that the repairs are needed. It makes them very, very vulnerable. Seniors are also often more vulnerable to high-pressure pitches because they're frightened to do the wrong thing. Very important not to respond to these. How does this work? Well, these are people who are going to come to your door. Are they going to do door hangers? You know those things they hang on the handle of your doors? Or they're going to send you something in the mail, or they're going to email you, or they're going to call you on the phone, but they're going to access you. Where did they get your name? How did they know about you? They read the obits, folks. They read the obits, and they go, Mrs. Cohen's husband died. I'm going to wait about a month here, because by then, everybody will have left. She'll be on her own. People won't be hovering around her anymore. I'm going to go downtown and look up in the records where Mrs. Cohen lives. And I'm going to go ring her doorbell. And here's what I'm going to say. Mrs. Cohen, I noticed that your tree out there on the sidewalk, the branch is very low. It could be hitting people on the head. That would be a problem. Would you like me to trim your tree? Mrs. Cohen says, oh, how nice of you. Thank you. By the way, says Mr. Repairman, have you noticed that the roots of your tree have caused your sidewalk to buckle? Do you know that if someone trips on that tree and is injured, although the city owns the sidewalk, you are responsible for the maintenance and you could be sued? Let me repair that for you, too. Okay, let's keep going back with our precious tree here. Our lovely fellow goes up the tree, and he comes down, and he says, Mrs. Cohen, I got to look at your roof. It's failing. Now, Mrs. Cohen kind of remembers that they replaced the whole roof 3 years ago, but she is not likely to be going up any ladders and looking at that roof. So she's going to take that seriously. She says, oh, gosh, maybe I better do something about this. What could I possibly do? He's going to keep offering you repairs, and eventually you're not going to be able to pay for them. What's to be done? These repairs must be done. Our repairman's cousin Ernie is a lender. Imagine that. Ernie will give you a loan to take care of these repairs that have gotten more and more expensive. I'm going to read you an example. An elderly couple with an outstanding balance on their mortgage of less than $1,000 met three men who presented themselves as representatives of a licensed mortgage banker and arranged for a home improvement loan secured by a mortgage on their residence. The proceeds of the loan were used to build a 50-foot decorative fence. After the refinancing required to pay for the fence, the couple owed $85,000 at a rate of 17.99% interest. I want you to know that interest rates right about now are at 5.25%. In addition, the lender charged them for $4,200 prepaid finance fees, and the mortgage broker charged a fee of $6,800. These fees were deducted from the total loan. Scam. I want to tell you one more thing. If you refuse to pay, if you think that it's shoddy work, they will and they can put a mechanic's lien on your home. It can lead to foreclosure. So these are really things you need to pay attention to. How can you protect yourself? Number one, if you don't know home repair people, your neighbors do. You have no people who do. If you don't, here's a tip. Realtors keep long referral lists of people who they use. We use them all the time. But always use a home repair person by referral. Make sure that person is licensed with the state. Any reputable home repair person is licensed with the state. You can go to the Better Business Bureau. They are online. And find out if they are licensed. Also, get references. Now, look, we all know anybody could give you the phone number of their cousin and say that that's a reference. But it's still a good idea to do because, quite frankly, if you're asking for references, they know that you're smarter than they want to deal with. Don't respond to solicitations. Don't respond to time or money pressure. That's really important. This got to sign it right away. Forget about it, okay? Anything that they're not giving you time to review and look over and think over and review with somebody else, You don't want to sign, so you can just tell them, no, thank you, goodbye. Money pressure? I don't think so. You have to pay me right now. Furthermore, you have to pay me the whole amount before the work is done. I don't think so. Any reputable contractor is going to ask you for 50% to get the job started. You are not required to pay any more than that, not only until the job is done, but until it's done to your satisfaction. That's really, really important to stay on top of. And finally, please never borrow from the contractor or his associates. Please don't do that. Foreclosure fraud can happen to anybody. Foreclosure fraud is happening to a great many people, as we're all aware of right now. It is not something to be ashamed of. It is not something to try and hide and try and fix yourself. It probably won't help you. According to AARP, 1 in 25 U.S. homeowners faces foreclosure each year. Tens of thousands are duped by predatory rescue lenders who promise 11th-hour help but instead trick their way into taking ownership of the properties. Older people are often targeted because, as we've said, they have high medical bills and lots of equity. This according, again, to the National Consumer Law Center. I'm going to read you a story that was on the AARP website. When Catherine Meads was facing foreclosure on her home in Washington, help came knocking, literally. A man appeared unannounced at her front door with a packet of information. It said, money to lend and save your house. Mead, who'd been unable to work and pay her mortgage, had broken both arms in an accident and had been caring for her two dying siblings. Mead said the man, an agent for a businessman named Vincent, told her he could help her with a loan to stop foreclosure. But after quickly signing the papers the day of her foreclosure, so she had pressure on time, but she was feeling pressure, Mead discovered that she had signed away her home and that the $9,203 loan to reinstate her mortgage was in fact a payment from Vincent to buy her home. They gave me no chance to read anything, and they didn't discuss the terms, she said. They just had me sign. She now rents her home from Modern Management Corporation, a company that Abel controls. So Vincent Abel controls it. Abel and company deny any wrongdoing. After all, she signed the documents. I find it hard to believe, I think we all do, that there are people out there who really don't care about anything but getting your money. That is the case. How does this work? Lenders publish lists of homes that are about to be foreclosed on. That list is actually in the Examiner. It's obtainable at City Hall. It's obtainable because properties are going to be auctioned, as they say, on City Hall steps. Foreclosure rescue services are perfectly capable of seeing those lists and coming to your door. As we've just heard, they ask for upfront fees. They ask to be put on title. Remember, put on title. And they tell you not to contact your bank or your loan servicer. That is exactly who you should be contacting. Because of the amount of scandal and problem that is now going on with some of the bank loans, they are becoming more and more willing to do loan modification and to help you out. It might take time, it might take energy, but trust me, it is better than a foreclosure rescue service. Those folks are not there to help you. We are also hearing a lot about what's happened with the banks. We're finding that, in fact, a lot of loans were foreclosed on, and it was fraudulent. Was it intentional? Maybe with some of the smaller lenders. I think that a lot of the larger lenders were overwhelmed and were wanting to unload a lot of the loans that they were swamped with. Are they culpable? It's another conversation, but let me read you something. An employee of Ally Financial's GMAC is a big lender, mortgage unit, admitted in a sworn deposition that he signed off on up to 10,000 foreclosure documents a month for 5 years. A month! What a surprise, without reviewing them carefully. That prompted Ally, which, by the way, took $17 billion in federal bailout and is majority owned now by the government, to halt evictions in 23 states. We are one of them. California is one of them. This employee also signed foreclosures for hundreds of other mortgage companies, including J.P. Morgan Chase. AARP's Fraud Fighter Program believes a new scam will rise to meet the challenge of improperly checked foreclosure paperwork. Now, we don't know how this one is going to fall out. We don't know how long it's going to take to fall out. I really recommend that you check AARP Fraud Fighter Program. They're very, very good, and that's a good way to keep up to date with this. So I'm going to do a brief recap here. Remember to always get referral. Remember to always get the terms of a transaction in writing. Never submit to pressure. And please remember, when in doubt, ask. When in doubt, have someone help you. When in doubt, have someone review what you're looking at. Thank you.
Thank you both for your talk. Just the last few years, I can't be risky, but I did bank CDs, and I used to get even over 5% interest or close. Now the interest is so low, it's ridiculous. And I'm just so confused. Some people say, oh, there are mutual funds that are safe, and others say none of them are. And then I know one financial advisor at Chase, who I've heard is very, very good, but she suggested investing just about everything I have, which is completely unreal to me. And she was talking about diversifying, but also annuities. I just can't understand annuities, and I wonder if you have any comments. I don't know what to do. I'd like to have some growth, but I can't be risky either because my income isn't that great.
I am not a financial advisor, so I'm probably not the person you want to ask about that. I would recommend asking somebody who you know and trust who they are using for financial advice. If you don't know anybody, you might want to go to one of the larger investment companies. But again, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm afraid I can't offer you that information.
Good evening. That was very informative. I wanted to add something insofar as the mechanics lien law is concerned. I think a lot of homeowners are not totally aware. I came across this problem because a friend of mine had contracted to do a huge amount of repair and gave the contractor $50,000. And after demolition, he bought all the stuff, he skipped town, and the supplier of the materials put a lien on the property. Mm-hmm. Because the California Mechanics Lien Law allows the suppliers to do that. So in my own case, when I talked to a roofer, and he said, it's going to cost so much money. I said, fine. You're going to pay for it, the roofing material? He said, yes. I said, I'll tell you what. Give me the name of your supplier. I'll go and deal with it myself. You tell them, tell me what you want. I'll order materials. I'll pay for it myself. Because if the suppliers deliver concrete, brick, wood to your doorstep, they have a right to put a lien on your property. If the contractor says he paid, even though he said give you a receipt and maybe he didn't actually pay, the supplier can put a lien on your property. That's all I wanted to say on that.
Thank you for sharing that.
Okay. I do have one question from the speak. I don't know which buyer it is. I don't remember. Robin, about the three-letter, three-digit security code?
Yes.
Well, a while back, we were very adamant in not providing it over the phone. And you said now that sometimes they ask you for a security.
Don't provide that number over the phone.
Okay.
Do not.
When you're doing phone purchase of theater tickets, they always ask.
You have to give it to them if you want the tickets.
That's
in that
right.
case. But hopefully you've called the right 800 number to get those tickets.
Oh, right. No, you said that if somebody asks you, saying that we got your credit card number, however, you've given it, for instance, to your dentist. I know from talking to an associate who offers credit card payment, you can't run the number through the electronic machine without the three-digit security code these days. And so if somebody claims to be from an office that you do business with, ask for the security code, what are you going to do? You have to give it.
You have to trust that business and only do business with people you trust.
Oh, okay. That's all. That's.
This week I received a card, which I will hold up, and I have never seen this before. This is from PG&E. It's a prepaid MasterCard saying that I conserved energy and it was a reward. I'm wondering how valid this is.
It is valid, and you can always call PG&E and ask them. You did a good job on conserving energy. I just got mine yesterday.
Two things about the security code. Like I got a new Bloomingdale's card, and of course they asked me for the last three digits, and I guess that was okay, right?
When you applied for it?
Yeah, I called the number to activate it, and they asked me for the security. Then I guess that's fine. The other thing is. When I called Fandango about a year ago, they said, oh, you want a free tour, a cruise. And I was suckered into this cruise, which actually now I don't think sounds so good. And I gave them, you know, my credit card and paid $500. And I haven't acted on it. I mean, you've heard about Fandango, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll take
it. Again, if you won something, it's strange that they would ask you for the $500.
I know. But it cost $500.
So if you haven't gone on the cruise, I'd go after Fandango and ask for my $500 back.
Yeah, I wonder. Some people think they don't return money. Do you think they might? Hopefully I'll find the number.
Yeah, hopefully you can do that. If not, there's an ombudsman in Travel and Leisure magazine, and you can write them, and they will get to the bottom of that free cruise and get your money back for you. Travel and Leisure magazine. It's a National Geographic publication.
What would you think about getting something in the mail with your Social Security number on the mailing label?
Look at the return address on that thing. You need to report that. Okay.
Our thanks to Nancy Meyer and Robin Myers for their comments here today. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 108th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.